If Israel has to reoccupy Gaza, they need to support that, not just for Israel, but for the Arabs there as well. Hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. If you want to know more information about the Inside Scoop, check out RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
The fact that, oh no, you once had a dream where you had a same sex, sexual dream about the same sex. And there's nothing wrong with that, but people don't want to focus on that in their own lives.
Well, this is true, Mark. And I understand your analogy of the scales, and I understand the logic of it. I have always subscribed to the theory, though, that this, what we are in this country, is a war for the hearts and the minds of the populace, the heart and the mind of the church is at stake. The church is being hijacked. This is always, has been.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, this should be Monday, but it's Tuesday because yesterday was a nightmare. Welcome to the program. Sorry about yesterday. I knew something was going to probably go sideways when I saw the Verizon truck just down the road from the palatial mansion estate with their cherry picker up in the air and some guy fooling with wires. And sure enough, a few hours later, no phones, no internet, no nothing. So, you know, there went yesterday. And it's tough because, you know, our phones are tied into the internet service here. So when the internet goes down, so do the phones. Which wound up with me, and, you know, being in a rural area here, cell service is not quite what you might like for it to be. I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way. For those of you who are new to the program, we get new listeners every day, every night, constantly, and I really do a terrible job of just sort of introducing things. But at any rate, that left me literally standing out at the highest point of the backyard, standing on a wheelbarrow like a rooster on top of a roof, with my crappy little cell phone, trying to get one bar, one stinking bar, to get the word out to Peter Godbold and Ben Birch, who would then spread the word to others that we were a bust for last night. You know, a fully funded, well-funded, more than just keeping the lights on operation, would have perhaps internet service from two different purveyors so that if one went down, the other would stay good. And maybe someday we will too. But right now we're just, you know, sort of hanging on. It is the fourth day of March. It is a Tuesday. We almost hit our goal for February. It's gone, and I'm trying to forget it. We almost hit our goal for February, our monthly goal of $2,000, just to keep things going here. And I hope that since this is a 31-day month, we'll actually hit it. The fact of the matter is, we've still got debts to pay, and we actually are operating in the red. But I'm at the point, you know, if we can get $2,000, hurrah. And, you know, it's fair to mention, just look, it's the first of the month. I'm going to mention this. I try not to beat on this. I hope you'll forgive me for even mentioning it because, you know, I despise it. And I look to the day when I don't have to. But the fact of the matter is we almost hit February's goal because someone very generously ponied up $500. And that was, you know, that's usually a one-shot kind of thing, and golly Moses, are we grateful. But it's not likely to happen every month, so if you subtract that out, we almost hit $1,500 for the month of February, which puts us in a pretty even deeper hole. So, you know, thank heaven we did, and thank you to that generous angel of a contributor. I don't name names out here simply because, one, I don't have permission. And someday, you know, someday maybe we will. Someday maybe we'll introduce you to the people who make this happen and keep going every blessed month. There are literally thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who listen to the horn, whether it be Guy James or Mark Levine, me, Peter Godbold, John Fox, the weekend programs, Rick Goodner, and the Billy Shears Night Sounds. There are thousands upon thousands of people who listen. Less than probably 0.5% contribute to the upkeep of the network. And to that less than 0.5%, I will, on behalf of the other 99.5%, thank you very, very much. So, you know, if I could figure out a way to get the other 99.5% more involved and help you 99.5% understand that the 0.5% can't do this forever, well, I would call it a success. I've got an email here I want to share with you from one of our regular listeners. I just saw something here that begs mention. There will be no, well, this is a truncated broadcast day. There will be no All Foxed Up, no horn section, and I'm finding out now, no Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold tonight. You know, if I'd had service last night, if the internet service hadn't crapped out, we wouldn't have had Strictly Confidential anyway, because while I have internet problems from time to time, our IT professional, Peter Godbold, has them much more frequently. And Peter is crippled right now. He just let me know his DSL is still down. It was supposed to have been fixed today. And right now it's still down, so it doesn't look good for having a Strictly Confidential tonight. Sorry. But at any rate, now I wanted to share an email with you that I got from one of our listeners, Michael. And he offers a generalized critique, and this is not pointed in meanness at anyone. But just a couple of observations, and I love these kinds of emails because this is part of the discussion and part of the dialogue too. Michael says, I love your callers. Hell, if I didn't, I wouldn't be listening, but I have to disagree a bit with Kate. I just don't see how it's helpful to constantly preach that there will be no election or that a certain presidential candidate will get the Bobby Kennedy treatment. Kate seems to be in a headspace that works for her, and I sincerely admire and respect that, but how are the rest of us supposed to function with that kind of soul-crushing pessimism rattling around in our brains? I want good people out there voting for the Democrat, period. I want them to stay engaged and excited and active. No good can come from continued repig-licking rule. Like you said, I hope Obama's people see to it that he is well-protected, especially if the Secret Service are not. But until something happens, and I pray that nothing will, I don't see how any good can come from prematurely digging the man's grave. And I understand that sentiment, Michael, and I hope I'm not contributing to that sense of negativity. But, you know, when we find out that the Secret Service has done what the Secret Service has done, not just in Dallas, but in San Francisco, St. Louis, Seattle, and Lord Jesus, Birmingham, it's hard not to get a little bit scared. And frankly, I'm hoping that by mentioning the Secret Service stand downs, that some degree of shame will be applied to the Secret Service, and the Secret Service will actually do its job instead of mailing it in, as the saying goes. Michael continues, regarding the ad with the 3 a.m. White House phone ringing six times, Kate mentioned this, but I'm not so worried about it. The Obama campaign responded very swiftly with an effective counter-ad, which I'm sure you've heard about by now. That counter-ad, which struck back at Senator Clinton's lack of judgment regarding the 2002 Iraq resolution, can be applied equally, if not more strongly, against insane McCain, or as I like to call him, the McCain-Turian candidate. Oh, they'll slime Obama. I'm certain of it. Make no mistake about that. Harold Ford ain't seen nothing that Obama won't see a thousandfold, but I doubt the 3 a.m. phone call angle, if co-opted by the Repigs, is gonna stick. On a side note, regarding the phone call ad, isn't that one of those hypotheticals that Senator Clinton's always objecting to, and rightfully so, when they're presented in the pageant? Hypocrisy? Nah. No. Just politics. Furthermore, I also have to disagree slightly with caller Luke. If and when we get Obama versus McCain, the Chris Matthewses of the TV world are not going to be saying how much they love them both equally in stereo. No way it's going to be, Senator McCain, you old manly war hero, you. I love you, man. You make my loins tingle with anticipation. Hasn't Chris Matthews said as much already, Michael asks? Yeah. He said McCain causes him a furrow in his pants. Or maybe he called them trousers. Whereas, in reference to Barack, we will hear the lifeless, brain-dead monotone of the Costco greeter from Idiocracy. Welcome to Costco. I love you. Only it'll be an obligatory, Senator Obama, I love you. Then, as if suddenly sprung back to life by 1,000 volts in the right in the ass, now you just can't seem to shake these rumors that you're a Wahhabist crypto-Muslim. Is that because these rumors are true? Now, Michael says, for full disclosure, I am an Obama supporter, but strictly on the issues. I will certainly support Senator Clinton if she wins the nomination. I am no Obama bot, but I'm not going to jump in the I'm not jumping on the Obama excitement bandwagon, just to be. Oh Lord, Gran, we got a sentence here that we need to diagram. No, I'm kidding. But I'm not going to jump on the I'm not jumping on the Obama excitement bandwagon just to be a contrarian or because some liberal progressives seem to think sitting this one on the fence is some sort of moral high ground. I did give money to the Kucinich campaign before he was tap danced off the stage by the media. There was tap dancing? All I saw was the big hook. But it wasn't anything near the amount I've given to the horn over the past several months. Not that I'm some big money supporter. Well, but God, Michael, you are so... If you only knew, you are. I have not yet given any money. $10 supporters are big money. Look it. $5 supporters are big money supporters when 99.5% of the people who listen to this programming don't support it. Just saying. I have not yet given any money, Michael says, to the Obama campaign, although I might yet give a little. Kate points out that Obama is able to raise so many millions of dollars in just a few days, so, quote, don't tell me there's no money, and she's right. But the million-plus people who have given money to Obama's campaign have never heard of the horn, and that's what we need to change. Love to all the listeners, says Michael. Love to all the callers. And love to the family. Love back, brother. Love back. And if he ever gets back into chat, you will know Michael as Kid A. So, that was... I love emails that take time to write and take time to think out. And that one's got a boatload in it. And you know, it may seem crazy, or it may seem like I need to be quickly medicated. That's a ginger ale can, by the way. It's not beer. I very seldom drink pop, but I broke down and bought a 12-pack of ginger ale yesterday because we still have the the raging crud running through the house. One of them has morphed into strep. Another one is just sort of miserable. The third one is getting over the pneumonia that her flu morphed into. Agnes is walking wounded, and I seem to be the only one that's in anything approaching good health. But look, you know what? If I sound like I'm complaining, I'm not. I am sincerely not. Because I signed up for this. This is life with the American family, and nobody out there, whether you have kids or not, has no. Look, if you're single and you get sick, it's a miserable experience, and it's even more miserable, frankly. Because, you know, I turn into a four-year-old when I get sick, and, you know, Agnes, okay, honey, I'll go to the grocery store and get you popsicles. That's what I get. And when she goes down, I militate at her and say, will you please get in bed? I can't, honey. The babies need me. They're not babies anymore. They're pre-adolescents. They can tear the house down by themselves now. But that's how Agnes is. So, I'm not complaining. This is just the America that people like Bushes know nothing about. This is the America that exists on the other side of the divide from our political ruling class, who has the best socialized medicine that American taxpayer dollars can buy. I got a story for later this evening, and I'm not going to name names because they wouldn't mean anything to you anyway. But I was alerted to something here in West Virginia. Oh, hell, I'll go ahead and tell it. You know, West Virginia does provide prenatal and birthing care for young pregnant women when they're, curiously enough, that's why it's prenatal, pregnant and having babies. And that's laudable. Frankly, I think that care should be available to every pregnant woman in this state and in this country. There should it should be, you know, show up at the hospital, have your baby in peace and quiet, and don't worry about the damn paperwork. But if we don't worry about the paperwork, some CEO of some insurance company can't make $42 million a year and get a $10 million Christmas bonus. Because the business of America is business, as Calvin Coolidge said. So I heard this story the other day of a young woman who was on state coverage, who had had a child and scheduled to have her tubes tied. Had she been private pay, there would have been no question. And this is rural West Virginia, and young women have babies. Those are just the facts. We won't be making any value judgments this evening. We won't be talking about whether that young woman was a Republican or a Democrat or a progressive or a liberal or a conservative or an anarcho-syndicalist. What she was a young woman who had had a baby and didn't want to have another one. And like I said, had she been private pay, her being under 21, had she been private pay, the doctor would have performed the surgery to tie her tubes. She was not, however, 21. She was 20. And because she was on public-funded health care, the doctor was not allowed to tie her tubes. Because the fundamentalists in this state, the fundamentalists that have so many states right by the throat, said that Jesus wouldn't like it if the state paid for her tubal ligation. No lawsuit will correct that. Nothing will correct that. and who have seen the young woman in tears. Well, that's why I'm talking about it. You see, we've got to have universal health care in this country. But we've got to make sure that when we have universal health care, that the fundies and the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, strychnine-drinking, snake-handling, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking fundies can't have a damned thing to do with it. Only intelligent people should be allowed to run a national health service. Imagine that. A government so enthralled to the right-wing religion industry fundamentalists that they would compel a young woman who already has a baby and doesn't want any more, would compel her to have more. Oh, and while we're at it, no. Birth control, mm-mm, sorry. Not that either. So I think that's a fitting topic for discussion because, you know, we talk a lot about a woman's right to choose, and I don't think, I think in the long run that's probably one of the most important issues in this country, far more important than, say, Israel and Palestine, far more important than, the whether or not John McCain's boffing his lobbyist girlfriend, more important than whether Barack Obama wears a lapel pin with the flag on it, you know, the flag idol pin. More important than whether or not Dan Burton thinks that Hillary killed Vince Foster because he, Dan Burton, went out in his backyard and shot watermelons to prove it. A woman's right to choose is one of the single most important issues in America because a woman's right to choose, and by choice I mean choose the status of her own body, whether it be a tubal ligation, whether it be contraception, whether it be an abortion, or carrying a baby fully to term. Those are all, the right-wing freaks have done such a job, and a masterful job at that, I must say. They've done such a masterful job of defining a woman's right to choose as solely being abortion. But there's so much more to it. It is a woman's right to choose when she will have a family if she chooses to do so, and with whom she will have a family if she chooses to do so. And that takes in so much more than abortion. That takes in economic issues. That takes in issues of fairness in the workplace. It takes in issues of education and poverty eradication. That's why I say that a woman's right to choose probably is one of the single most important issues in this country. And the idea that a full state government, even that of West Virginia, poor little West Virginia, the idea that a state government would be so enthralled to the right-wing fundamentalist religion industry gomers that they would supplant their judgment for a young woman's who is old enough to vote, who is old enough to join the military and die for her country, by God, but not old enough to have a drink or old enough to make a decision about her own fertile body. Well, that sort of brings home to me how very desperately important the coming elections are, and how desperately important it is that we do, as Michael noted in his email, support the Democratic nominee, be it Senator Clinton or be it Senator Obama. So that's a starting place tonight. There's other things too. There's some good news out of the state of Tennessee that I want to share with you. I and heaven knows many others far more deeply involved in the mountaintop removal scene and the fight to stop it, have told people all along, just because it's not in your backyard now doesn't mean it won't be. We've said all along, you know, West Virginia and Kentucky are getting the worst of it. Virginia is getting and doesn't even want to try to stop it. West Virginia's government is a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry, although a brave, brave senator, state senator by the name of John Blair Hunter did stand up and introduce S-588, which eliminates mountaintop removal. He'll be lucky if he's reelected. Bless his heart. Now, he probably will be reelected because he's up in Morgantown, and he has a constituency that hasn't been touched by mountaintop removal and doesn't want to be. But at any rate, mountaintop removal for a couple of years now has been sort of snaking its bony, hateful, murderous fingers into East Tennessee. Because there's some coal in them there East Tennessee hills, too. Black gold. Black diamonds. But lo and behold, in the Tennessee State House, the Tennessee Senate has introduced a measure that would eliminate, criminalize, end almost all mountaintop removal almost all mountaintop removal demolition in the state of Tennessee. And you know what? I have a general opposition to Republicans. You know that. That's why I call them Repiglicans. But I want to give you an idea of how much Tennesseans, even Repiglican Tennesseans, care about their state. A co-sponsor of the measure banning mountaintop removal in Tennessee is the Republican leader of the Tennessee State Senate, a man named Mark Norris. He said he's sensitive to property rights arguments, but he disagrees with the coal executive's claims that passing the measure would have dire effects on the industry in the state. We'll have to go out of business. We won't be able to support the Tennessee economy in East Tennessee like we have. We are the backbone of the economy. And if we don't have the mountaintop removal in the economy, everything will go to hell and Tennessee will collapse and cease to exist. You know, they do that speech in West Virginia, and our moronic politicians go, really?
Oh, no! We gotta have it! Coal's good for West Virginia!
In Tennessee, apparently, however, even the Senate Republican leader says, you know, I disagree with that. I don't believe that. And while this bill is opposed, I like to think it's got a chance. And I want to applaud that Tennessee Senate Republican leader. A little golf clap. A little golf clap for a Republican leader. Hell, standing ovation for that Republican leader. You know what? I'd take a bunch more of him than I would of the mugwump blue dog the Democrats in the West Virginia Senate who won't get behind John Blair Hunter's S-588. This is because, you know, as I've said before, D or R behind a politician's name in this state doesn't matter near so much as the C. And the C, baby, stands for coal. Let's try the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan, how are you, dear?
Oh, hanging in there.
Goody.
I find it ironic beyond belief that you can die for your country, but you're not allowed to get your tubes tied. I mean, that just, well, it's infuriating to put it mildly. There were two reasons for me to call. One is, you know, you've heard Barack Obama being called the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
Because he can walk into a town and pull these huge crowds. Okay, it's too late to do anything about it now, but what I want to know is why didn't he do a fundraiser for Dennis Kucinich? Dennis is fighting for his life in Cleveland. Why didn't he do a fundraiser for Dennis Kucinich?
Obama?
I ask, yeah.
Mainly probably because he's fighting his own fight at this point. I mean, that's what his people would say, I imagine. It's not his fight.
Yeah, but he could combine the two. You know that as well as I.
Elaborate, please.
Well, it's very easy to turn a fundraising event for Kucinich, say, to all of your supporters, all 20, 30,000 of them that you pulled in, donate to Kucinich and then proceed to give a dilly of a campaign stump speech for your own campaign. Why didn't you do that?
Probably because Dennis Kucinich has been less than complimentary to Barack Obama. I mean, let's just be fair here.
Short-sighted at best.
I saw a video last night that was a smear on Michelle Obama. Or, well, I don't know if it was a smear or not, because I don't know the truth of it. It was all about her corporate ties to a couple of groups. Not going to name names. Not going to give the website.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched it all the way through and thought, well, And at the end, guess who it claimed to be in support of?
Kucinich?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So there, I think that's the answer to the question. He may be fighting for his life, and Barack Obama may very well hope that he doesn't win the fight. That is pure speculation on my part. But yeah. had that been my wife, and it was said to be,
I didn't know about that.
I didn't expect you to. But that's why we have these conversations, so we can share information with each other that we all don't have.
The other reason I wanted to call in was about the mountaintop removal thing.
Yeah.
You know, you were saying, people outside of West Virginia, you know, don't tend to pay any attention. Pay attention, folks.
It's coming. Yeah, some kind of it is coming your way. I mean, whether it's...
Yeah, otherwise it's a show coming, to your area soon. If you live on the West Coast, don't think you're immune. You're not. We're trying to do it here in Oregon. And that's been
it's a larger metaphor for letting the extraction industry, whether it be coal, oil, or gas, get away with murder in various and sundry corners of the country.
Exactly. And it's basically letting these industries rape at will, be it coal, gas, logging, mining, you name it. Doesn't matter what they destroy, how they destroy it.
Yeah, I had an email a while back from one of our listeners up in Washington State talking about beating back the urge to put an LNG, liquid natural gas terminal, nearby. And,
they want to put it right up the river from me. The thing is, you know, and they were saying, oh, this would be such a wonderful thing. What they very carefully did not mention was the minute they do something like that and they want to transport that, they have to shut the entire river down because it's so dangerous.
Yeah, take all, I mean, every last little bit of traffic off the river, right?
Yeah.
And we're talking about the Columbia, right?
You shut the entire city of Portland down. You shut the International Shipping Channel down. All the way to the coast.
Yeah, all the way from Portland, basically Portland to Astoria, right?
Yeah. It's insane. And we're saying, no, we don't need this crap.
Well, there's, and that's the thing. We have mountaintop removal here. Folks in eastern Montana are beset by deep pit mining that has destroyed the Powder River Basin.
Yeah.
They also have cyanide leach bed gold mining, which they outlawed a few years ago, a decade or two ago, but that continues to be a persistent poison upon the landscape.
Yeah.
Western Montana is beset with a host of problems that will make that little chunk of paradise not very paradisical for much longer. In Arizona, it's an entire aquifer being pumped away for a coal pipeline into California.
Oh God!
It goes on and on, and it's the things that go with it. It's the people of Texas, of whom I was very proud for stopping a whole host of nasty coal-fired power plants coming their way. People in North Carolina who stopped one. People in South Carolina who are trying to stop another one. They haven't succeeded yet, but they're trying.
Yeah, we're trying to stop some of them here in Oregon, too. They keep wanting to put these filthy, filthy coal-fired plants, and they say, well, we'll put scrubbers in. And you say, yeah, we've heard that one before. No, you won't. You're not going to put the entire thing.
Yeah, but we can sequester the carbon dioxide gas. Where are you going to sequester? We're going to pump it into the ground.
Yeah,
genius. I mean, it's the same. It's the same thing as, you know, letting the industry argue environmentally sound policy is like letting fundamentalists argue women's health choices.
Uh huh.
I mean, they really are. They're the same thing. You know, if you're gonna let somebody come in and argue women's health choices, well, look here, I've got a 5,000-year-old book that was put together by people who didn't know when it rained and couldn't master the damn wheelbarrow, and it says, you know,
on top of that, it was written by a bunch of men.
Well, yeah, and if men got pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament. I know. But really, the fact of the matter is, you know, I'm sick and tired of them. I am just sick to damn death, Susan. I mean putridly sick. That song that I play from time to time that I just love to pieces, Will Kimbrough's Less Polite.
Yeah.
That's my anthem. It really is. Because instead of looking at these people and saying, you know, I disagree with you, but you have a right to your opinion. I want to haul off and punch him too, but I will settle for just looking at him and go, you're insane. You don't get to be part of the discussion. Go pick it at a, you know, go stand on the sidewalk, fat white man, and hold up your anti-abortion sign, but get out of this scientific policy, public policy debate. You don't have any business here. And that's not religious persecution. That's ignorance persecution.
Yeah,
and it's not persecution. It is, you know what? All prejudice is by and of itself, Susan, not a bad thing. It is not a pejorative term. There is nothing wrong with being prejudiced against people who are deliberately stone dirt stupid. And I include in that group every last fundamentalist of every stripe. Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, Inuit, animist, whatever. If you're a fundamentalist, you're a moron.
Bless you. It is so nice to hear that. It really is.
And it just, you know, free speech, fine. You go have your free speech. I know the Bushies made us go to free speech zones. That's not what I'm talking about. You have your free speech, and we'll have ours. Only we're trying to solve problems here, and you're doing something else in a corner.
Yeah, maybe I'm old, that the way I was raised, that a free speech zone I was raised in went from the East Coast to the West Coast to the Canadian border and south to the Mexican border.
Yep, and the Gulf. Darn right. And so, I mean, we have real problems. I got kind of frustrated, and I didn't mean to make Mark mad or anything, but, I watch the chat room, and people get really burned up on these Israel debate shows. And I finally realized, I think, what's bothering me. We have real problems in this country. We have real problems in this world, problems that are American problems. We have health care problems. We have finance problems. We have deficit problems. We have tax problems. We have environmental problems. Women's reproductive rights are under assault. We're involved in a war that we're going to be paying for still 50 years from now.
And Bush wants to start another one in Somalia.
Bush wants to start one wherever he can.
He bombed Somalia yesterday.
I know. But the point is, a non-American problem 8,000 miles away that just gets a whole bunch of Americans all burned up. I don't know. It's kind of like talking about Terry Schiavo. All kinds of people got burned up. But I despise the issues. I despise the issues that do nothing more than divide us, because there are no solutions to those problems that we as Americans can create.
I never thought of it in quite those terms, but you're right. It is like Scheibel. I never quite put it in those terms. It is a lot like Scheibel.
I don't have an emotional or physical or intellectual investment in the Balkans.
Neither do I.
I mean, look, okay. This is me being very non-Gandhi, and it's not cruel either. It's just me saying that I don't have it. They could go, it doesn't do anything to my life.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Middle East.
On my event horizon.
Same thing with the Middle East, with the exception of the oil, and we get most of that from non-Middle Eastern sources anyway. No matter how. See, there's a little bit of smokescreen going on. The vast majority, you hear senators, well, we're going to increase coal production so we can be less reliant on foreign oil. You know where most of the foreign oil comes from, Susan? Most of the foreign oil comes from Canada, Mexico, and Venezuela.
Yeah.
Something like 15% maybe comes from the Persian Gulf.
And where the Persian Gulf foreign oil, most of it is going is to China.
Precisely. And so, take it a step further. Now, American oil companies are in the Middle East, and they have a vested mm-hmm. interest in Middle Eastern oil, but they're not necessarily shipping the Middle Eastern oil to the United States.
Yeah.
This is government policy run for purposes of crony capitalism.
Yep. Otherwise known as fascism.
Bingo. So, I don't know. I want to maybe work on our national attention deficit disorder a little bit and talk about stuff that really matters. And if somebody catches me talking about Israel and the Palestinians or trying to decide who hated more in Bosnia-Herzegovina, blah, 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 blah. Somebody stop me. Somebody change my focus. You can do it. I charge you with this. I charge you with this, Susan. If you catch me talking about the Middle East, talking about the Israelis and the Palestinians, talking about the Serbs and the Croats and the Bosnians and the Herzegovinians and the Kosovars and the Albanians and the Macedonians, if you catch me talking about that crap, straighten me up, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, and this applies to me and you as well. These are all based, not only in all of these countries, but in Scotland and every place else, on feuds that began hundreds of years ago. And let's face it, they are no longer germane. And who gives a flying fart in the wind? I don't.
Yeah, and listen, this applies to the questions regarding Icelandic property rights, too. I want to make sure that I'm not being in any way racist or xenophobic, or the move for true Scottish independence. That, too. Now, I mean, that's cocktail party talk. We can do that from time to time. But if it does get mentioned, Susan, it has to be mentioned under the broad umbrella of it doesn't matter worth a damn.
Yeah, it comes under the, to me, it comes under the same thing as the joke about what does a guy have under his kilt. It's a joke because it's anything that goes on like that for that long and you're still killing people over it. It's a joke.
Well, I don't know.
It's a tragic joke.
I don't know where you were last night, but I see you won first prize. Yeah, I know the joke.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a tragic joke because you're still fighting over something that is totally irrelevant.
You know, I want, and that's not to say that these issues don't matter, because as a humanist first and an everything else second, Susan, I do put myself in the shoes of various and sundry people from time to time, you know, emotionally, via imagination and via empathy. I do that. And mostly I try to look, you know, I've never been a member of the super rich, so it's harder for me to climb into their Bruno Mali loafers. But I can look, I can try to look through the eyes of the downtrodden. You know, I can try to look through the eyes of a Palestinian, or a poor Israeli who has had their child killed, children perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, a Kosovar who saw his entire family mowed down, a Tibetan who is a person without a country because of the depredations of the Chinese.
I can do
all that, and it does matter, Susan. It does matter.
Yeah, it matters to them. But let's face it, you and I and America, we cannot become the world's policemen.
But it's not even that. We had at least some semblance in this country of a perch on the moral high ground.
We don't anymore.
We have ceded that high ground. And the thing is, we didn't get pushed off of it. We ran away from it, Susan. And that is part of the hard work, whether it is hard work that is led by Barack Obama or hard work that is led by Hillary Clinton, that we must do if we are to talk meaningfully about solutions in these places. So I guess I'm not saying I don't give a damn about these people. I'm saying that we must prioritize what we do so that because we give a damn, we can work on solutions.
Let's face it, until we fix our problems here, we can't do anything anywhere else.
We're crippled. We are absolutely crippled. We can't talk about human rights to anybody else when we flushed our own down the toilet.
Yeah, it's like expecting a soldier to go into combat with his legs blown off. It's just not possible.
No.
We have to fix ourselves first. I'm sorry if that seems self-centered, but it's practical. And one thing.
You know, for the fundies or the faith crowd out there, and I draw a distinction between the two, you know that, there's an element of what I'm talking about that is under the rubric of physician heal thyself.
Yeah.
You know, how can we tell Israel how to treat the Palestinians? How can we tell any majority how to treat a minority when we ourselves leave people bobbing face down in the fetid, stinking waters
of Katrina?
Of Katrina in the lower Ninth Ward.
One thing I would like to ask anybody who has a chance, if you're ever at a campaign function of these two Democrats and you have a chance to ask them a question and you can't think, if you're trying to think of something to ask them this. Say, Mrs. Clinton, Mr. Obama, George Bush has accumulated a huge amount of power. Would you turn that power back as president by statute if needed? As president, would you give it back?
Yeah, and I'd like to see that question answered. But of course, that's a question that neither one, to be honest, wants asked, pardon?
I think it needs to be asked, though.
Yeah, but do you really want it asked? I mean, I'm not being sarcastic about that. Because the thing is, the minute that question gets asked, it's a loaded question. Because on the one hand, if you ask it of the McCain-Turian candidate, he's going to tell you that we need to, you know, it's vitally important for our national security, and America has never faced a greater challenge than it does from Islamofascism, and yada 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 yada, and he's going to get a walk on it. On the other hand, if you ask it to Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, and if perhaps one of them would say that the unitary executive theory is a tremendous overreach, then they're going to be tarred and feathered as being a bunch of Osama-loving... Yeah, see, he don't want... Obama don't want to take care of our national security. I was telling you the other day, wasn't I, Mabel, about how he won't say the Pledge of Allegiance with his hand over his flag pin over his heart. Wasn't I telling you about that just the other day, Mabel? I was telling you, and how he wants to take his oath of office on the Quran. I was telling you that too, Mabel.
Do we want our government back, or do we want another George Bush?
That's my point. Questions like that get you another George Bush. Because the media will give McCain a pass and blister the very hide off of either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama for it.
Okay.
And if they answer the way we don't want them to, well, the left is going to come unglued. Because we ain't got much glue to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
We got the Hilarians accusing the Obama people of being the cultists. We've got the Obamaniacs thinking of the Hilarians as some sort of just slightly to the left of Stalin fascists. And the whole thing is quivering like jello in the heat.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me put it this way then. Somebody needs to ask it of the newly elected president, whoever. Right out of the starting gate.
Well, see, I'm not in at that point in time, and this is where having a meaningful Congress comes in. I'm not up for asking the new president anything. I'm up for the Congress telling the new president a few things.
Yeah, well, we've all seen Congress doesn't necessarily have the spine to do that. But if you put the newly elected president on the spot, you just might get the answer you want. What's he going to say? No, I'm going to be a dictator?
Well, see... In the Constitution, Article 1 is the Congress, Article 2 is the President, and Article 3 is the judicial branch.
Yeah, that's true, provided you can get the Article 1 Congress to stand up for itself.
But it's in that order for a reason, because Congress is the most important branch of the government.
Provided you can get Congress to stand up for itself. I don't know about you, but as far as I'm concerned, Nancy and Harry Reid have to go.
Oh, I'd like that very much. But those are entrenched positions, and unless there's enough of a enough force to make that absolutely happen, don't count on it.
Do you know what I? If
I mean, I'm not being a pessimist here. It could happen, but don't count on it.
I understand that. Here is, see, this is just a flyer off the top of my head. And I'm not saying that Hillary is going to lose the election. I have no idea what's going to happen. But let's say Obama is elected president. Do you know what I see Hillary doing? Assuming the party doesn't tear itself apart.
If Obama becomes president, I see her going back to the Senate.
I see her, if she handles herself right, I see her owning that Senate for as long as she wants it. And she can basically sit in there till the day she dies and determine what gets voted on, the whole nine yards. And that's more power than 99% of the presidents that ever walked in the White House. She should maybe think about that.
Yeah, but you've also got to understand that we tend to look at Senate Majority Leader as some sort of plum. It's not necessarily a job that many senators want.
No, I'm not talking about Senate Majority. Who has the real power in the Senate right now? It's not Harry Reid.
Okay.
Kennedy.
Yeah, sort of.
Uh-huh. If Ted Kennedy says, this is the person I want to fill my shoes, Senate is going to follow her. Never mind who the majority leader is. Doesn't matter.
You're going to love this email. I'll keep the author's name out of it. Bob, you uncaring bastard. How dare you push aside the needs of the world to concentrate on the needs of this nation? The Serbs, the Israelis, and on the kibbutz, and certainly the Ecuadorian Vestal Virgins need our help. and they deserve it until we destroy ourselves giving it. So there, you isolationist prick.
I love it.
That's me, Bob Kincaid, isolationist prick. I can't pay for that kind of material. And you know what? If I had the money, I would. That's the beauty of this network. I think I'd probably put at least 50% of the listeners on staff, just writing stuff. And we'd bury the Daily Show. There are some funny people out there.
I got to make you a sign.
Ecuadorian Vestal Virgins.
Expect it in the mail.
Okay.
You got to make it. You're going to get expect it in the mail. It's going to, you can put it up next to your Pastafarian scripture. Anyway, my lingering fond image is of you yesterday standing on top of the wheel.
Oh yeah. You know, I remember when I was a little bitty boy, I had a board game that I played with all the other little children called Hey Pa, There's a Goat on the Roof. Don't ask. It was just a board game. It was fun. It involved a farm and a barn and a goat on a roof, and I don't remember the rules. But when I was standing on the wheelbarrow with my 2 feet precariously perched on either side thereof, standing really still so I wouldn't lose the one stinking bar that I had gotten, I remembered that game. Hey, Pa, there's a goat on the roof. Hey, Ma, Dad's on the wheelbarrow again. And you can just hear somebody out there go, oh, is that what they call it these days? He's on the wheelbarrow again.
wheelbarrow is some sort of code, I'm sure.
Did you do for a living just after I got married to Donald?
No.
Well, Donald was a master house painter. I got drafted. So there I am in the rain in Seattle on top of a three-story apartment building painting the fascia. That's, you know, the board on the...
Yeah, I know.
Hanging over the edge of the roof, painting this. I'm an epileptic.
Yeah, and you said, and there I am in the rain in Seattle. Now, isn't that a little bit redundant? I mean, doesn't Seattle sort of presuppose in the rain?
Well, yeah, that's true. You know, we call it liquid sunshine.
Yeah.
But on top of everything else, here I am. I've got a seizure disorder, and I'm hanging off.
Hey, Donald, bring the strobe light. Let's make it a party. Oh, we've run through the hour, Susan. This has been a delightful conversation.
Yeah, you have a wonderful day, and give my love to Agnes.
Yeah, I think by the time the show's over, I'll go out and party and stand on the wheelbarrow some more. I don't know. God, civilization. You know, I think about places where you can order pizzas and they'll bring you the pizza. But you know, how could I ever trade that from being able to? I'm living the good Green Acres life. You know, I'm thinking about maybe putting a pole up in the yard and just doing the show from on top of that, and let Agnes stand at the base and holler, Oliva.
I've got a recipe for a really neat pizza that I could send you, and it's really easy to make.
Okie doke.
How about that?
Well, that's good too. You know, the whole delivery thing is that you don't have to, but.
Well, yes, I understand that, but then, no, you do what you can.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I don't make a bad pizza anyway. With the gas grill fired up to about 650, 700 degrees and the pizza stone in there. Oh.
Ooh, cool. Yeah,
pretty darn good. Pretty darn tasty.
Like, yeah, you pretty well have to invite me to dinner when I come visit.
Sounds good. Susan, you have a wonderful evening, and give our best to Donald.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye now. Okay, so we'll take a little musical interlude. And come back after that. Your phone calls are always more than welcome. You know that. You know the number, too. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. If you need us to carry the freight, we'll be happy to. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. We'll be right back. This is America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and there ain't nothing else like it.
just inside the doorway. Use it only in emergency. Better you should pray to God, the Father and the Spirit will guide you and protect you from up here. Can you hear me? Can you hear me running? Can you hear me running? Can you hear me calling you? Can you hear me? Can you hear me running? Can you hear me running? Can you hear me calling you?
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Wow, that felt like a vigorous first hour. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I love our conversations. And it drives me nuts when... It drives me nuts when I miss a night like last night, especially when it's, you know, for no good reason other than literally a screwed up cable pair on a telephone line. Eesh. But, you know, here we are, broadcasting on the razor's edge of technology, and sometimes in our little technical ballet, we cuts our little pieces. And it hurts us. What am I channeling Gollum now? Okay. An email that's a response to an email that's a... you know how that works. You guys are... you know, we get the debate and the discussion going one way or another. Kate writes in. And this is, you know, this doesn't qualify as some sort of email feud. She says, caught the email from Michael, slam dunk. Love it when someone responds to the stick poking them.
Oh.
Folks get scared when they hear another point of view. I respect his opinion, but he doesn't hear everything I have to say. Never said not to vote Democratic. And regarding my negativity, I'm only connecting the dots based on historical perspective. I'm 63. Ike was still a general when I was born. Have seen it all fall apart. Those behind the curtain will not give up their power. And, of course, Michael and others don't know that I spend hours every day meditating for peace and healing on this planet. Kate says, I've been flamed before, but not for a while. Good to know that folks are listening. I pray that I'm wrong and that the collective consciousness is rising above all this. Thanks for reading Michael's post. Kate. I don't think Michael was flaming you. I think Michael would say Michael wasn't flaming you. This isn't about flaming. This is about perspectives and reaching for solutions. And most importantly, we're talking about issues that do matter, that matter here. All kidding aside, I'm not an isolationist. I ascribe to the, what do they call it, the Gaia theory? Or the Peking butterfly effect or whatever. I believe that stuff. Oh, there's that hateful damn word. I trust that some of it is factual. How's that better than believe? Wow, I wish you could have just heard that. I don't think it quite made it through the microphone. It is 11 minutes past 7 here. It is full dark, and the sons of bitches on the mountain just let off another charge. They've been blasting for all they're worth all day long. But no, I do. I really, really feel that it is all, that every, you know, as Tom Robbins put it, everything is part of it. And I do ascribe to John Donne and his ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee, and his no man is an island unto himself, I'm part of the continent, yada, yada, yada. I don't think he wrote the yada, yada part. I think I just put that in. And my heart does break when I open up a news site and I see some Palestinian baby that's been blown to smithereens because one group of people who are genetically identical to another group of people think that that group of people doesn't have a right to exist. Blah, 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 blah. Makes me nuts. And it is engaging to talk about because, you know, some people talk about sports. A lot of us like to talk about world events. And it, and you know, I preach daily to my children that they've got to know what's going on in the world around them, that they can't just huddle up into a cocoon and think that if they just ignore it, it'll all go away. Because it does all come home sooner or later. The cost of building materials is through the roof right now, not just because the dollar is devaluing, not just because the inflation is driving prices up, but because so many construction products are gone to Iraq that they have become scarce in America. So the fact that we are in Iraq is real, and that is an American issue. The fact that we have killed 1 million Iraqi civilians, directly or indirectly, is an American issue because it affects our ability to look at ourselves as anything resembling just or peace-loving or decent. Oh, and while we're at it, speaking of just and peace-loving and decent, let's get this over with.
Go over to, if you want to see this, it's posted because it's become rather hard to find. Go over to the website at headonradionetwork.com. And look up Marine throws puppy over a cliff. Now, it was last Friday, was it, we were talking? Thursday. Mark Levine and Peter Godbold and I were talking about the latest revelations from the Abu Ghraib photo bucket file. And we had photographs of an Iraqi man standing naked, cruciform, covered in liquid feces. We had a photograph of a grinning American woman in her military costume, bending down, giving the thumbs-up sign with a big old grin like a fox eating poop out of a wire brush, next to a molting, long-dead corpse with broken fingers. We had a picture of an American soldier with his latex gloves on, because he wouldn't want to get any blood-borne diseases or anything, beating the crap out of an Iraqi prisoner at Abu Ghraib. We had all of those things. And, of course, we discussed the fact that the American Bush administration response is to say, well, you know, these are the actions of some bad apples. And one bad apple doesn't spoil the barrel. Of course, that's a lie. You go get a barrel of apples. Put a rotten one in the bottom and see what happens to the rest. Welcome to the wonderful world of fermentation. One bad apple does spoil the barrel. But, you know, we don't have apple problems in this country. No. We have barrel problems. And I offer you the audio. And this is incredibly visual, so it can't do it any justice at all. And I'm vamping now, waiting to see if the doggone thing's going to load. But I have the audio here of the video that I just urged you to go to the headonradionetwork.com website and view. It has a warning, viewer warning, Marine throws a puppy over a cliff. And, you know, that title just seems so over the top. Because we say things like, oh, what's he going to do next? Stomp kittens for an encore? And I've been, from time to time, I've said things like, well, you know, would the Congress impeach George Bush if they caught him drowning kittens in front of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? Why, no, the Congress wouldn't do that because the fundies were out there saying, isn't that sweet? He's baptizing kitty cats now. And it really is, it's an over-the-top metaphor for how cruel and miserably screwed up our administration is. But guess what? Sooner or later, in the land of the free and the home of the brave, everything becomes real. Everything becomes a realistic, sort of absurdist nightmare. So too with the puppies.
Cute little puppy, huh?
So cute little puppy.
Oh, I tripped.
That's mean. That was mean, Matari.
Did you hear the thud at the end? That's a member of the United States Marine Corps and his buddy holding what looks to be about a 6-week-old puppy by the scruff of the neck and hurling it off what appears to be a 40-foot cliff. The that part, that's while the puppy's in flight. The thud comes at last. Oh, that was mean. Irony, sarcasm, charming, isn't it? I can't do a horror like that justice on the air, because it's video and it's visual. But you can go to headonradionetwork.com and you can see it for yourself. We've asked you to look at some pretty horrible stuff in the last week between the Abu Ghraib. You know, well, what do you want? You take an 18-year-old kid, you dehumanize him, you tell him he's a maggot, or some such verbal abuse. And then you have the temerity to act surprised. Not you, but, you know, figuratively. Then the military has the temerity to act surprised when the instilled sociopathy of their training methods goes as far as throwing puppies off cliffs. You know, watch the video. It's in the middle of what appears to be some sort of damn desert. Where'd he get the puppy? Is this some relation of former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, the cat killer who in his college days would go and adopt kitty cats from the Humane Society in Boston and take them home and cut them up? This is the country that has the moral high ground? This is... God almighty. Yeah, I know. But of course, we can't, you know, we can't say... You don't love the troops good. You hate America because you don't like for them to throw puppies off the cliffs. You hate America. I wonder what Sean Hannity would do with this. You know? What would Sean Hannity do with the Marine throwing the puppy off the cliff? Thump.
Worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife
and our puppy.
I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom,
and no Marine can throw my puppy away. And I'm proud to be an American, where we throw puppies off of cliffs and we stomp on kittens on live TV. Oh, shut up.
Let's go to the phones.
Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Oh, I tell you what, I saw that, some of that last night, and I was just like, no. I said, this has got to be the Onion or something. They can't have done something this stupid. Oh, yeah, they did.
It ain't stupid, Luke. It's mean.
I know.
It's evil.
And the thing of it is, and you sit there and film it. And it's like...
Well, but you got... No, you see, though, but you film it because everybody in the barracks thinks it's funny.
I know.
Because it's part of our kill culture.
Well, you know what it is. You're talking about Sean Hannity. Well, this boy deserves to be in the officer's candidate school.
Yeah, officer material.
Oh, let's get into something else. Something better.
Before somebody starts swearing.
I know. We'll take turns. Have you noticed, though, how absolutely, I don't want to use the right, use the correct word, how unbalanced some people became about Senator Obama's getting this, endorsement from Farrakhan, and he's like, you have to denounce this. So our question is, where is this? Is this whole other side? Where is the question to Mr. McCain? Mr. McCain, what is this with you and this Mr. Hagee?
Yeah.
You know, the knuckle dragger. You know, the one who just said, was it New Orleans was destroyed because they like gays.
Yeah. Gee. Even though, but that's, you know, the funny part being, of course, that the storm didn't wipe out the part of New Orleans that's inhabited by transvestites and transsexuals
and drag queens. Of the city. But you know what I mean? It's just amazing that, you know, like I said, that's just passing. As we've said before, you know, I mean, you know, Senator McCain, he's a maverick. He can get away with anything. Apparently he can because, you know.
And of course, Pastor Hagee has come out in his own defense. You've seen that, I assume.
Which one?
Well, where he said that, oh, gosh, I got it right here. Let's see. Here we go. Want to hear it? Yeah, we'll run it real quick.
This is the great whore of Revelation 17. This is the Antichrist system. This is the apostate church. In this cup, if you will read it in the book of Revelation, is the blood of the saints. This is talking principally about the blood of the Jewish people. Where? From the Crusades that happened back here. From the Spanish Inquisition. From the Holocaust. When Adolf Hitler came to power, he said, I'm not going to do anything in my lifetime that hasn't been done by the Roman Church for the past 800 years. I'm only going to do it on a greater scale and more efficiently. And he
had enough. Now, so he came out and he said, I have always had great love for Catholic people and great respect for the Catholic Church. My wife comes from a Catholic family and millions of my viewers are Catholics. I'm shocked and saddened to learn of the mischaracterization of my views on Catholics that has spread while I spent the weekend celebrating the 50th anniversary of my entry into the ministry with family and friends. Throughout my career, I've been a strong critic of Christian anti-Semitism, but any fair review of my record will demonstrate that I have consistently criticized all Christians, Protestant and Catholic alike, for the sin of anti-Semitism. In fact, I rarely address this topic without castigating the founder of Protestantism, Martin Luther, for the horrendous anti-Semitism he spouted toward the end of his career. It is a bitter irony that in my zeal to hold my fellow Christians accountable for our past anti-Semitism, I now find myself compared to an anti-Semite. To call me anti-Catholic makes about as much sense as calling me anti-Protestant. I am not, most assuredly, neither. I am not neither. That's a double negative.
I was hoping when
that
I
means he is, you know.
No. But when I heard all this breaking when it first came out, I'm sitting there going, oh, good. John Hagee in one corner, Bill Donahue in the other. I see a cage match coming.
Steel cage, iron gloves, and chainsaws if I had my way.
Oh, it'd be a fun one because two people, I don't care either thing about either one of them. Like give one barbed wire and give the other one the cattle.
Oh yeah, but by all means, mainstream so-called professional media. I don't call them mainstream anymore. I can't stand that because they're not. They don't write. By all means, professional media have an absolute blue scream and hissy because Louis Farrakhan said that he likes some of Obama's ideas, but remain silent on John Hagee, the hateful, pasty-faced, doughy white dude bigot.
You know what I noticed something though this weekend, and I was sitting in Sunday morning watching the jabbering head shows, as I call them. And you know, every once in a while you hear them say, well, we don't know why our viewership's going down. I was sitting there going, looking at all the morning shows. I flipped around, looked, see who all they had on. You realize they don't have anybody on their shows pretty much under 50?
No. Because there aren't any smart people under 50. Why do you?
I know.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? You always hear them complaining, well, we're losing the young people. It's like, well, why the hell would they want to look in and see mom and dad scream at them?
It's almost as bad as... Well, then again, you could make the argument that young people... It's almost... I was going to say it's almost as scarring as when you open the door and catch mom and dad having little sex. But that's a lot what it's like, you know, when you tune in and there's Chris Matthews talking about a furrow in his trousers.
I ain't even going there tonight with all this stuff on. I just said I ain't going to look at TV tonight.
Now, to be fair, I hope to someday be a 90-year-old dirty old man with my 90-year-old, well, she'd be 87-year-old dirty little wife. Because I believe that it's good however old you are.
True.
But by the same token, it's also not for public consumption.
It's too true.
And so when you click over on Sunday morning, and there's pants, there's trouser furrow, the Matthews, it's the same response. Oh, my eyes!
Well, the one that got to me this week, though, was this whole thing with the NAFTA letter, or memo. And I'm sitting there going, have you noticed in the last 2 days, and mentioned this, have you heard anybody use the word lie? You know, isn't it amazing when the Obama camp for weeks, whereas they never even met with them, and all of a sudden the memo comes out and says, oh, yeah, they met with us, told us they weren't even, you know, don't pay attention to what we're saying, we're just doing that for the public. But I still, to this day, have not heard anybody use the word lie. Okay, now reverse it. Imagine if Hillary Clinton had been caught doing the same thing. Can you imagine? I could just see 4 hours a night of Chris Matthews screaming that, you know, oh, what's their secret agenda? What are they, you know, what else have they lied to us about? It's just, you know, it's just.
I know.
I'll ask you this, and I don't know if Agnes saw this, but I'm just curious. What is this editor up at the Washington Post? Is he brain dead?
Are you talking about the woman comment?
Yeah,
Okay, wait a minute. Wait, we can't just talk about this and assume that because we know about it, everybody else does too.
Okay.
Let me see if I can get to that real quick. The Washington Post has a woman problem.
Well, it was it in their Outlook section, I believe, where it was that they put this letter or op-ed, I guess you'd call it, and then after apparently a few people noticed. But the day after, all of a sudden they scream, oh, it's just tongue-in-cheek, we swear, it's just tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
I want them to show me where in the article it says that.
And what it boils down to is, it's the Washington Post. You're the Washington Post. You don't get to do tongue-in-cheek, okay?
If you do, that's fine, but have it done by somebody, you know, who you know is tongue-in-cheek. I mean,
well,
you know,
yeah, or if you do, if you
get Roseanne Barr or somebody like that to do it, but don't put one of your regular people on there who ain't known for being a tongue-in-cheek writer.
Let's see here. I think I've got the story here now. It was a Washington Post piece, and again, if you want to do this, do it on April 1st.
Or like say,
Media Matters describes it, despite papers' concern about keeping women as newspaper readers, Washington Post published essay calling women kind of dim and the stupid sex. What they say is, though Washington Post ombudsman Deborah Howell has stated that, quote, concerns about keeping women as newspaper readers has been an issue for many years, the Post published an essay by Charlotte Allen, and I've never heard of Charlotte Allen.
I haven't either. I mean,
in which she called women kind of dim, suggested that women were not only, quote, the weaker sex, but, quote, the stupid sex, our brains permanently occluded by random emotions, psychosomatic flailings, and distraction by the superficial, unquote, and claimed that Senator Hill, and of course, what's the raison d'etre of the whole thing? Also claimed that Senator Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign has been, quote, marred by every stereotypical flaw of the female sex.
Oh, I thought, you know, and I'm sitting there going, I'm just waiting for him to tie into the other thing, you know, this thing they've had the last couple of days where, what was it, Hillary S. Sybil. You know, isn't it amazing?
Well, we talked about this last week. Maureen Dowd called her Sybil.
But how dare she have more than one mood? Like, well, gee, Maureen, you have about 30. Which one do you want to pick to go with all?
No, those aren't moods. Those are personalities where Maureen's concerned.
But you know what I mean? That's it. It's like, gee, guess what? Sometimes I'm a happy person. Sometimes I'm not a happy person. It's, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, if you want somebody that's the same all the time, congratulations. Welcome to autonomy on you. I mean, it's like, I'd worry about somebody that's always, you know, one. You know, all the time. It's like, I want somebody that does get upset. I want somebody that does get concerned.
I'm glad you brought this up, Luke, because this is just astonishing to me. Because regardless of which way I vote in my what may turn out now to be strictly ceremonial primary, I wish that somebody would, that the powers that be would pick a position and just stick to it. Because either Hillary Clinton is a ball-busting, hard-ass, unfeminine, masculine, or she's a hysterical female. You know, pick one smear and stick to it. Neither one of them is true. She is a human being with the wide gamut of human emotions. The problem is, in American media-driven politics, Luke, that people are not allowed to be human. I mean, can you imagine, never mind Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln would be put in a loony bin for running for president. He would be Kucinich'd. He would be Edwards'd. Mm-hmm. All right. But how about Harry Truman, who was enough of a plain, you know, you want the straight talk express?
Harry Truman would have chewed up John McCain and spit him out.
Well, sure he would. And
dared him.
It was while FDR was still president, but the battle for Surigao Strait in the Philippine Sea, in which Admiral Halsey directly disobeyed orders and went chasing off after a phantom diversionary carrier task force and left a handful of destroyer escorts, destroyers, and a bunch of so-called jeep carriers or escort carriers to fend off the entire Japanese Navy, it was not well thought of. But for propaganda purposes, he wasn't called on the carpet.
Not at that time.
But yeah, McCain's daddy was in charge of one of the carriers that went chasing off on Halsey's wild goose chase. But anyway. Harry Truman would have been pilloried by the Chris Matthews's and the Tim Russerts of the world for daring to suggest that a member of the Washington Press Corps, Drew Pearson, was a son of a bitch. Now, Drew Pearson dealt with it, and Drew Pearson was a gossip monger and a piece of crap.
Oh, yeah.
But he dealt with it by starting the SOB Club and invited the rest of the Washington Press Corps to join him. But not today. Oh, no. You know, can you imagine if Hillary Clinton came out and said Chris Matthews was a son of a bitch? Well, the feminists would crawl her ass for using the B word.
Yeah.
And the fundamentalists would crawl her ass for being a profane, secular, humanist, atheist woman. The right wing would be shocked. That a member of the American political class could use such coarse and vulgar language.
After they've had the Bushes, who apparently cuss a blue streak every time they can.
Right, and meanwhile, George Bush would be sitting in the Oval Office going, "F word, that's funny."
One thing especially off topic. Well, this thing now. Apparently, you know, no one's been paying that much attention. Apparently, this fun thing with the Palestinians and the Israelis and Hamas, it's going right down the crapper, as we expected.
Sure. Condi sent an emergency effort to save peace bit.
Thing where they said that, I saw somewhere, and I can't think where it was right now, but apparently it got released this past week that apparently the Bush administration told the Israelis, or Abbas, I can't think what his name is, the head of the Palestinian group, that it was okay if he wanted to throw the Hamas people out and all this stuff, where, you know, when they had the last election, where, you know, they gave him, you know, the green light, said, you know, if you want to go into like Gaza and try to throw the Hamas out, that's fine with us. It was somewhere, and I can't think where I read it. It's in the last couple of days. You know, I mean, essentially, he was saying, you know, go ahead and have elections when you do it, because we aren't going to honor them anyway.
Yeah, elect all you want. Yeah, yeah. Like it matters.
Well, and the thing of it is, here you are dealing with the head of the Palestinian group, and he barely speaks probably for 35% of the Palestinians.
But you know, oh dear, I'm violating the oath I took earlier. I said earlier that that I wasn't going to talk about Israel and the Palestinians anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's not your fault.
I just saw that story and just, you know, we've been also, and, you know, so wound up in the election. we got to remember there still are other things going on in the world.
There are other things going on in the world, but I've decided to take the position that we have to physician heal thyself ourselves.
I know. Well, the one I'm worried about.
But no, just to be fair, just to put this out there, Luke. The Israelis will talk to anybody who shows up at the table without a gun. On the other hand, Hamas won't show up at the table without a gun because Israel has a habit of killing everybody who says the word Hamas. So, you know, it creates a rather intractable situation.
Well, you know, it's that little thing of, you know, isn't it amazing how we scream and holler about, oh, the Palestinians are terrorists. But we don't say much when Israelis will take out an apartment building to kill one man. You know, and they'll absolutely blow a neighborhood up to kill one person.
Yeah, swatting flies with sledgehammers.
Yeah.
But they don't view a Hamas leader as a fly. They view him as a snake.
Well, you know the one though that this week now is starting to really I'm scared because I know what the lunatic in the White House will do. Is this thing with Colombia and Venezuela?
Yeah, they've sent troops to the Colombian border now.
Yeah. Well, apparently the Venezuela essentially sort of cut off the border. You know what I mean? But they haven't entered. But apparently they've just kind of gone right to the border. So I'm just wondering when Georgia's going to order bombers in. Hey, it was
oh please! No, I can't. I don't. Luke, I don't even think I. And I know you didn't say that flippantly.
No.
But I can't even contemplate. Yeah, but it won't be the bombers. It'll be the Blackhawks and the Apaches and so forth.
But you know what the worry I have more than anything else is the fact that we're going to win, I think, in November. But you know what? The day after the election, I think he's going to pull Daddy's trick and go to Somalia.
Well, he bombed them yesterday.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, say, the election's over. Nothing else can be changed. Can't hurt that now. Send them in.
Or Colombia, because please bear in mind that Colombia's government is the last government that is overtly friendly to us in that region, because Colombia's government is the last fascist dictatorship.
But that's what I mean. I mean, he'll go down there, hit the Colombians, I mean, hit the Venezuelans and swear it was to protect the Colombians' way of life.
Right.
Because
yeah.
The Venezuelans were coming across the border. Even
right, because the Venezuelans are terrorists.
Yeah.
I know.
Now, dare they elect their president.
Now, meanwhile, in Colombia, union mine leaders, or union leaders, union coal miner leaders, are taken out in the middle of the night and get two in the chest and one in the head. People are killed for mentioning that Coca-Cola pays off right-wing death squads to rub out people who want to organize their workers. And yet, somehow,
the old banana people are paying too.
Right. Somehow, we haven't managed to get Colombia onto the state sponsor of terrorism list yet.
Where is Mr. Negroponte when we need him? You know, where is Death Squad John? Is he? Any down there yet?
I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't packing his bags and working on his
resume.
No, the guide that you get for going to different foreign countries.
Oh,
Yeah, you see what you see.
But those who are listening who don't understand, we have explained many times how Mr. Negroponte shows up. Amazingly enough, within a month, apparently death squads start forming in countries. It happened in Iraq.
He has a way of, you know, these things just follow him around. He's like the Pied Piper of death, Luke.
Oh. You know, well, you know how it is. I guess is the School of the Americas is still pumping out people, and they have to have places to go. You know, it's job placement. That's what it is.
Yeah, because enrollment's down. Well, the Guatemalan and Honduran and Colombian enrollment are still up, but they're not getting the Chilean students and the Venezuelan students and the Bolivian students and the Ecuadorian students and the Peruvian students anymore, or the Costa Rican students or the Nicaraguan students.
It is the drug cartel.
And you know, if enrollment goes down much more, they won't. If enrollment goes down much more, they won't be able to play Division I A soccer anymore. Oh, that was bad.
They play highlight the hard way, you know.
Yeah, with bullets.
Hey, Luke, you have a good evening, buddy.
You too, Bob.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye now. Well, I feel kind of bad about this. Just this email just rolled in from Jim in Alabama. Love your show. Alabama? Homeboy! Love your show. And I mean that because, you know, I'm an Alabamian myself. Born, you know. I just love knowing that there's listeners in Alabama. And Georgia and Tennessee. You know, I love the idea of putting liberal talk into the belly of the beast, so to speak. And bear in mind, I'm in the beast, too, so I'm not being derogatory. Bob, love your show. I have to tell you about a situation that just happened. I'm busy trying to meet a deadline for tomorrow, so I picked up our new eight-week-old Shih Tzu off the floor, put a sweater on the desk next to the laptop, and gave him a palm leaf coaster to chew on, which he was about tearing up bit by bit. For the last 10 minutes, he was chewing on it, having the best of times, while I sat here working, listening to your show. When the sound of the puppy came over the speaker, Buster dropped the coaster immediately and stood up, staring into space with a look of shock. He just sat there for the next several minutes, looking into space. I was amazed to see his reaction. After about 3 minutes, he laid down and hasn't moved since. Even an eight-week-old puppy knows the sound of death. I can't believe people can be so cruel. Now, nearly 15 minutes later, Buster lays there in complete silence, obviously overwhelmed by the death throes of one of his own. What a pitiful story. Keep up the good work. Jim. Oh, God. But, sure. I've had about four emails already, four separate emails saying, you know, I won't look. Can't look. I won't let my children see it. Our 14-year-old would burst into tears and would be inconsolable for the next hour or so, because she actually values not just human life, but life. This from Cindy with regard to the Marines who threw the puppy off the cliff. These are the filthy offspring of General Custer. Take away their puppies and they'll toss babies. Nits make lice, you know. I'll change the language, but she said, screw the troops. I can't make a generalization that this is everyone. That they are emblematic of the entire military, but they are emblematic of a mindset within the military. You cannot have a military that is scrupulously concerned with suffering and death, because then you won't have a military anymore. Those 6 or 8 weeks of basic training, those are 6 to 8 weeks that are dedicated to dehumanizing not only the recruit, but the way that the recruit looks at the rest of the world, looks at suffering humanity. And the Pentagon, given an opportunity, would argue that it has to be this way, that it's always been this way, and that you can't have a bunch of sensitive people running around with guns, because then they won't use the guns when it's time for them to use them. Some of this having been proven in previous wars by statistics that said that maybe, oh, what was it, in the Civil War, only 1 in 10 soldiers could bring themselves to fire their weapons. And similar statistics with World War I and World War II. Still, we managed to win those wars, but yeah. But we want more than 1 in 10. We want 10 in 10 firing their weapons. And in order to get that 10 out of 10, that 100% rating, you have got to do something to the malleable minds of 18-year-old immature, mostly young men.
Now, there's not any debate left. The studies are out that show that the human brain does not reach an end to its growth phases, an end to its hardwiring, or a completion, I should say, of its hardwiring, until about, what, 25, 26 years old? That's why young people have more car wrecks. Not because they are dumb or stupid or new to driving, but because their brains aren't fully baked yet. All right, some of you, stop with the baked jokes. You know what I mean. That's why there's not a. That's why the military is out there recruiting. Look, they start recruiting kids the minute they walk through the high school door at the age of 14. Because the Pentagon understands that if it says that it won't, you know, recruit anybody under the age of 25, that it's going to be a lot harder to mold those brains than it is the brain of a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old, or an 18-year-old, or a 20-year-old. But I'm disturbed by the potential truth of the fact that, of what Cindy said, take away the puppies and they'll toss babies. What does it, and again, please, wait, this is not just us. This is pretty old. I'm looking for something real quick. See if I can find this real quick. Nope. Okay, this is going to take me just a second. Just a little something to... A little something to put some perspective in this. I'm sorry, I'm killing time. I'm looking in Henry V. I'm looking for the speech outside Harfleur. There we go. On the one hand, you've got Henry, who says things like, you know, once more under the breach, dear friends, once more. Disguise fair nature with hard-favored ray. Okay, yeah, look. 15th century basic training. Once more under the breach, dear friends, once more. Or close the wall up with our English dead. In peace there's nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility. But when the blast of war blows in our ears, then imitate the action of the tiger, stiffen the sinews, summon up the blood, disguise fair nature with hard-favored rage, then lend the eye a terrible aspect, let pry through the portage of the head like the brass cannon, let the brow overwhelm it as fearfully as doth a galled rock o'erhang, and jutty his confounded base, swilled with the wild and wasteful ocean. Now set the teeth, and stretch the nostril wide, hold hard the breath, and bend up every spirit to his full height. On, you noblest English, whose blood is fet from fathers of war proof, fathers that, like so many Alexanders, have in these parts from morn till even fought and sheathed their swords for lack of argument. Dishonor not your mothers. Now attest that those whom you called fathers did beget you, Be copy now to men of grosser blood, and teach them how to war. And you, good yeomen, whose limbs were made in England, show us here the mettle of your pasture. Let us swear that you are worth your breeding, which I doubt not, for there is none of you so mean and base that hath not noble luster in your eyes. I see you stand like greyhounds in the slips, straining upon the start. The game's afoot. Follow your spirit, and upon this charge cry, God for Harry, England, and St. George. Really? What is it, 14th, 15th century basic training? But there's something else. Let's see. That's Act 3, Scene 1. Let's try Act 2, Scene 4. Nope. Act 2, Scene 3. Three, scene two? Nope. Okay, sorry, this is just not working. Ah, there it is. There it is. I knew I'd find it. Just about had to read the whole damn play and enough dead air to drive a truck through. But you want to... There's... To be... Let's just be square about this. As I said, nothing special in our dehumanizing our troops, our making our troops callous to the suffering of not only the enemy but the innocent as well. It's the front end of the bribe. The back end payoff is stuff like PTSD and so-called wounded warriors howling in the night and being attended by someone at Walter Reed who has been taught to think of that person as a guest and of themselves as members of the cast, all in some sort of great, sick, macabre, absurdist theater piece. So in Henry V, Henry is outside the gates of Harfleur. And he tells the leaders of the town, "How yet resolves the governor of the town? This is the latest parle we will admit. Therefore to our best mercy give yourselves, or like to men proud of destruction, defy us to our worst. For as I am a soldier, a name that in my thoughts becomes me best, if I begin the battery once again, I will not leave the half-achieved Harfleur till in her ashes she lie buried. The gates of mercy shall be all shut up, and the fleshed soldier, rough and hard of heart, in liberty of bloody hand, shall range with conscience wide as hell, mowing like grass your fresh, fair virgins and your flowering infants. What is it then to me if impious war, arrayed in flames like to the prince of fiends, do with his smirched complexion all fell feats and linked to waste and desolation? What is to me when you yourselves are cause, if your pure maidens fall into the hand of hot and forcing violation? What rein can hold licentious wickedness when down the hill he holds his fierce career? We may as bootless spend our vain command upon the enraged soldiers in their spoil as send precepts to the Leviathan to come ashore. Therefore, you men of Harfleur, take pity of your town and of your people, whiles yet my soldiers are in my command, whiles yet the cool and temperate wind of grace o'erblows the filthy and contagious clouds of heady murder, spoil, and villainy. If not, why in a moment look to see the blind and bloody soldier with foul hand defile the locks of your shrill, shrieking daughters, your fathers taken by the silver beards, and their most reverend heads dashed to the walls, your naked infants spitted upon pikes, whilst the mad mothers with their howls confused do break the clouds, as did the wives of Jewry at Herod's bloody hunting slaughtermen. What say you? Will you yield, and this avoid, or guilty in defense be thus destroyed?" Funny how it always comes down to what a military will do to the civilian population. Ah, Bob, but they weren't civilized. I mean, that was 15th or 14th century England and France and stuff. And, you know, they weren't, and, you know, we've killed a million Iraqi civilians. Directly and indirectly. In the war and the following occupation. How many we've killed in Afghanistan? Not so sure. But there's a long tradition. Now, bear in mind, you know, in this speech, he talks about his soldiers, and he calls them licentious, dirty, hot and forcing, enraged, filthy and contagious, spoil, villainy, defiling. But in the previous one, the locker room pep talk, he tells them that they're noble for doing all of it. That is why we tend to try generals more as war criminals than common soldiers. Because the generals make it happen. Not our generals, mind you. We can, you know, we're America. We can commit all the war crimes we want to, and nobody will ever hold us to account. Kind of like being a big-time 1A football team in the 1960s. What violations? Let's go to the phones. Oh, no patience. So, you know, there you have it. That's why, in a word, that's why puppies get thrown off cliffs. That's why prisoners in Abu Ghraib get stood cruciform, naked, and have feces, liquid feces, poured over their heads. Jesus. You know? Just damn. So we'll take a little break and then we'll come back. A little musical interlude. This is America's liberal voice. This is the horn. This is a radio experience, unique, both over the air and on the internet. And you're part of it. Coming right back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The UAW says workers striking American Axle are fighting to preserve good-paying manufacturing jobs. The union says the company continues to make unreasonable and unnecessary demands attacking wages, pensions, and health care benefits. UAW workers on the picket lines are fed up with those attacks.
They were saying that he had on the table $14 an hour. We make around $23.84 plus COLA now. And now corporate America just wants to keep all the money for themselves. When you hear about all the bonuses and stuff that they have, why take a wage cut if you're still reporting so many profits? If they attack the people that make the cars, who will buy the cars? If the people that make them cannot afford to buy them, how do they expect the Walmarts, the Kmarts, the supermarket people to be able to buy the things that we make?
If we're moving more and more towards a third world way of life, a third world living standard, and it's getting worse and worse. The working class right now is in trouble. We're in serious trouble.
How much is a presidential candidate worth to your union? Jesse Russell takes a look at some big numbers.
How important is it for a union's endorsed candidate to receive the Democratic nod for president? If dollar signs are a good measure, then nearly $8 million over 2 months. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the American Federation of Teachers, and the International Union of Painters Allied Trades spent a combined $3,675,000 to support Senator Hillary Clinton's bid for the presidency. Not to be outdone, the Service Employees International Union, the Teamsters, Unite Here, and the United Food and Commercial Workers have spent a combined $3,744,000 to support Senator Barack Obama. The lion's share of the spending for Obama can be attributed to the SEIU, who endorsed the candidate in mid-February, and have spent more than $3 million. On Clinton's side, it is AFSCME pulling the funding weight, using more than $2 million to support their candidate and earmarking more than $234,000 for Obama opposition. The AFT isn't too far behind, pitching in nearly $1.5 million for Clinton support. So how much will this election end up being worth to unions? With Ohio, Vermont, Texas, and Rhode Island going to the polls today, we may know by tomorrow morning. Here is today's economic report. Is the United States in a recession? It all depends on who you ask. According to President George W. Bush, we are not in a recession. But according to billionaire Warren Buffett, the U.S. economy is essentially in a recession. The CEO of holding company Berkshire Hathaway said on CNBC this weekend that he has seen a significant decline in purchases at the retail businesses his holding company owns. Buffett said, by any common sense definition, we are in a recession.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Man, that's a lot of money. You heard that, I assume. But the stakes are high, too. I wish we lived in a political system where unions didn't have to spend money like that to try to get someone into office that would actually listen to working people. I sincerely do. But we don't, yet. You know, it's unions that are actively involved in many instances in supporting clean elections laws that provide for public funding of campaigns. Because the money that they use on political issues might well be spent elsewhere. And I'm sure you can find some who would say that it would be a good thing if it could. But right now, the political... that's the money the unions have spent. I'd like to see the numbers about what the investment bankers on Wall Street have spent. Or what the corporate CEOs have spent. We've seen some of that. It's an attempt to balance the pernicious effect of dirty money. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, David, how are you?
Hey, how are you? I have a request.
Okay.
I think you should play some Jeff Healey.
I think I should too. I am sad,
and I don't think anyone really.
I'm sadly lacking in it.
Yeah.
What a tremendous.
I think the thing with Healy is, and please, Healy fans, don't track me down and hate me for saying this. But I think the thing with Jeff Healy was the producers that he had. A lot of his stuff, they tended to make him go into a contemporary, slicked out, if you will, overproduced blues, and a lot of his albums fell short of that. Whereas I think with Stevie Ray Vaughan, they did it to an extent, but with Healy, it was overboard. It was kind of like, who's a good example of this? Richie Sambora, Eric Clapton kind of thing. And I think that's really what hindered him. Like, after he did the Angel Eyes ballad, I mean, he gets props as a guitarist. I think he was a revolutionary guitarist. No doubt about it.
Well, let's back up just a little bit. John Fox put me onto the news last night.
Yeah.
Jeff Healy, a Canadian guitarist whose first love was jazz and blues. What, he had a 30,000 piece of vinyl collection, hosted his own radio show, I think, in Toronto, yeah. and was a master in his own right, died after a long battle with cancer at the age of 41 a couple of days ago.
He put out... He was even a virtuoso or near virtuoso on the trumpet as well.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he has a club in Toronto, and he put out his a record called Jazz Masters, I think, when he had like a protege woman, and they did standards and things. Because really, the truth is, in the jazz world, the only way to pay the bills, this is a sad problem, and this is a sad problem with our country, is that the only way to pay the bills is do the standards.
I went down to the crossroads.
No, not just that. I mean, the jazz standards. If you don't play Autumn Leaves, get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's what I'm.
And that's the only time I'll sing tonight, by the way.
I know. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, that has to do with the guard that's in control right now, Bob. I mean, a lot of people say, look what happened to Stanley Jordan. I mean, Stanley Jordan, when was the last time he put out an album? You know the reason why he hasn't put out an album is the same reason, because the producer will come in there. There's a great article I got to send you. It's by this guy who does the music thing blog.
Well, you know, you send me some great stuff, David, because I read that Geldof article after the show,
man.
Friday night, and I just sat, because on the one hand, I don't know, I don't think I took it as negatively as you did.
No, I didn't take it negatively. It's just that the gears went shifting in my head, like.
Oh, it made me want to put it made me want to put a straw in a tequila bottle. Is what it made me want to do.
It made me realize that Geldof is a politician, and I see why he put out that bomb. Of the We Are the World in the UK. Now I can see how that happened. He doesn't have the exact. He doesn't have the right decision making when it comes to making the right, like the right instinct on things. And I think on something like that, I guess he played it like a politician. I mean, I can't fault him for that.
No, but what I saw there, you know, he was deliberately biting his tongue because he despises George Bush for what George Bush did in Iraq.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think some of his description, even though it sort of went against the grain of everything that I personally feel, not think, but feel about George W. Bush,
right.
A lot of it was probably, you know, George W. Bush actually believes the crap that he's been told to say. That's why he is such a he has been such an effective puppet. Because Pinocchio has been told that he has no strings, and no matter how many times that his arm comes up, unbidden, he still thinks there's nobody pulling him.
Right.
That's just God raising my arm.
Right. I agree with you. There isn't that much I can say on that. I just wanted to talk about music related things.
Yeah. Sure. But yeah.
The Healy thing for those people now. See, that's one of those things where. When audiophiles talk, they don't understand why Healy was a revolutionary innovator and all of that. Okay, the reason why Healy was a guitar revolutionary was he played the guitar flat on flat, like a
like a lap steel.
Yeah, like a steel, but he played a Fender on his lap like that, and he was blind.
Yeah, well, that's why he developed that style, because it was what came natural to him, because he had retinal cancer as an infant, and that's what brought on his blindness.
Mm. He does a really good version of, probably you can find it on YouTube, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. You can see him in action, probably. So R&P to Jeff Healey. The other reason I called was, I don't know if you heard this, Bob, but, Trent Reznor surprised the crap out of everyone by releasing a nearly two-hour album called Ghosts. It's an instrumental album. He crashed his server.
This was recently? I mean, didn't...
This was Monday.
Yeah, but I mean, didn't he put something out not that long back?
He put Year Zero out. This was something that he was surprised his fans with completely. And here's how much of a success it was. He overrided the record companies, and he decided to do, like, eight different options. You could get a $300 version. You could get a $75 version. You could get a $5 version. And he encouraged people to download it for free and pass it around. And it worked in his favor because of all the options he gave the people directly. And it's a really interesting album. A lot of participation with a lot of other musicians like Adrian Belew. There's a lot of it's really different for a Nine Inch Nails album. It's kind of ambient soundscapes throughout the world.
You've sold me. I'm gonna shoot me the link.
Don't worry, I'll pass it to you. And if anyone else wants it, you know, just pass them the link, and it's cool. Ghost is a really interesting surprise. I've listened to about, I think I've listened to the first disc of it, and it's really a dreamscape. It's a dreamscape type album.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. I guess it's a modern day. You could say it's Trent Reznor's rite of passage of Enoville or something. Something like that.
Yeah, it's his white album.
Well, you know, one of the things that I don't think people noticed was the fact that maybe the reason why he called it Ghosts was Brian Eno and David Byrne had an album out called My Life in the Bush with Ghosts. So maybe there was a tie to that. I don't know. But
I remember My Life in the Bush of Ghosts. That was Eno and Fripp, wasn't it?
Right. And so I don't know, but the other thing I wanted to mention was the fact that did you get a chance to see the Carlin special yet?
No, I haven't. I've got it sitting and waiting.
George Carlin pretty much. I encourage everyone to go to YouTube and download "It's Bad for You," the new George Carlin special. It pretty much says what's on my mind. And one of the things he calls the United States is he calls it not the United States of America. He calls it the United Strokes of America.
Oh, God.
Because he says it's one giant stroke of time on everyone.
It's a big old off, sure.
That's what he said. And he really goes into little cliche phrases that we say, like children are the future. And he talks about age and growing old a bit, and he gets into his observations as always on religion are really a eye opener. So people should check out that.
He's been a brilliant spokesman for agnostics and atheists and thinking people for a long, long time. Way back when he was talking, way back, he was describing religion in terms of, religion is like a lift in your shoes. If it's good for you, that's fine, but don't go nailing lifts onto the feet of the natives.
Well, I always think that George Carlin opened the doors of people's minds and their the filter and allowed someone like a radical type thinker like Bill Hicks to come on the scene.
There's definitely a continuum through George Carlin and Richard Pryor and up to Sam Kinison and into I don't know. Sam Kinison and Bill Hicks were contemporary, and it's an open debate as to who was ripping off whom.
But then
you get Dennis Leary, and it's obvious that Dennis Leary built an entire career on a dead man's material, namely Bill Hicks.
Yeah. The thing that makes Bill Hicks so unique was he was born on Beethoven's birthday.
Well, and the other thing that makes Bill Hicks so unique is that he didn't do comedy, but what he did made people laugh. That qualifies him not as a comedian, but as a humorist.
Yeah, that's true. And he was also a really good guitarist, going back with the Jeff Healey thing.
Was he really? That I didn't know.
I've
seen him. I've seen segments where he noodles around on an acoustic, but I didn't know that.
I guess what he really wanted to do, what really was his passion on the side, besides when he got really involved with talking politics and social issues and just issues and topics of the day and just philosophy in general, he really pursued the guitar in terms of he wanted to be like a serious musician, like a
I love that, because no matter how many talents a person develops, it's the one that they don't have that they want the most.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
It's the Hollywood starlet saying, "Yes, I know, but I really want to direct."
Yeah. I did see a interesting film called The Terror's Advocate about Jacques Vergès.
Okay.
The lawyer for Algier terrorists.
Ah.
And I guess what was really interesting about it was how he demonstrated certain governments were were basically in conflict of what they were saying against terrorism, the whole counterterrorism argument and all of that. And he really talked about going to the dark side and a lot of the people he represented, because he represented, if you saw the list of people he represented, you'd be like, wow. But then at the same time, what he said and who he went to bat for, it was pretty amazing too. I guess he spent 7 years underground for his thoughts. He represented a lot of leftist radicals in France, and I don't know. It's an interesting film. I think people should.
I can never hear the word Algiers without thinking back to, what was it? The 1966 film, The Battle of Algiers.
Yeah, that's a reference point they use in the film quite heavily, because they wanted to demonstrate what that meant at that time. They were talking about how the people. This fact kind of startled me. People would wake up at 4 a.m., all of the people, and you would just hear this constant hum, which was just basically a chanting or prayer of all of the people that had passed or something the previous day. I mean, that's how in tune they were with one another. It's an interesting film, and if people are interested in a film with French subtitles.
Well, it's fascinating, and what I mentioned earlier, the Battle of Algiers, David.
Yeah.
I don't know if you realize this or not, but in 2003, the Pentagon screened the Battle of Algiers in reference to getting ready to start the war or having started the war against the people of Iraq.
Yeah.
Because once again, because so many of the people in the Pentagon just really aren't that sharp. They thought it was a text. It was a how-to.
Yeah.
When in fact, what it is a film of don't do this. But they thought it was going to teach them how to deal with an insurgency. A flyer for the screening. I'm just pulling this from Wikipedia. A flyer for the screening of the Battle of Algiers at the Pentagon said, "Quote:
How to Win a Battle Against Terrorism and Lose the War of Ideas. Children shoot soldiers at point-blank range. Women plant bombs in cafes. Soon the entire Arab population builds to a mad fervor. Sound familiar? The French have a plan. It succeeds tactically but fails strategically. To understand why, come to a rare showing of this film. Don't!
You know, in good news, Melanie Morgan has been kicked off her radio program.
I wondered if we were going to get around to that.
Yes.
And I got to... Is Spocko still out there, David?
I don't know.
Because there I would have imagined if Spocko's brain is still up on the internet, that there would have been, like, you know...
Oh, yes, I think he did. He did comment on it. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. Balloons and party hats and stuff.
Yeah, if you go to Crooks and Liars and look for the picture of Melanie Morgan and say KSO host fired or something like that, you'll find it.
And you know, good riddance to bad rubbish, but, yeah... Michelle Malkin is all upset.
Oh God! My theory is what I believe Glenn Greenwald and some people have hypothesized, which is her husband Jesse something or other is the one who writes all her pieces, because he is the one who really felt passionately about these issues, and she's kind of just like instantly pops on the scene, but he sort of has a conduit to work through, a vessel, and I don't know, maybe he's kind of like programmed her in some ways, because it just doesn't gel right, the fact that I guess Jesse Malkin is his name, that Jesse is no longer to be seen because of the organizations that he was tied to in the past. He's almost kind of like a David Horowitz in training or something.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Just the mention of David Horowitz puts me off my midnight snack.
And one last thing I wanted to mention was, I guess I wanted to talk about what Mark Levine was saying about the I word. And really, all I can say to Mark is this. What do you want me to do to protect Israel? I mean, pretty much anyone, we really can't. We're here in this country. We have bills to pay. We have problems to work out here that are magnifying by the minute, by the second. So what is it that the Israel supporters want us to do? I mean, do you want us to keep talking about it? I mean, we'll do that, but after a while, it seems to me that the issues of this country are being completely unfocused, and we're never going to get around to them. Now, that doesn't make me an isolationist or nationalist. I'm just telling you that if there's nothing I can do...
And that's that. That's what I was getting at, David, is that we have real problems. And it's interesting to discuss, and it's fun if there's argument from both sides. But after a while, like Terry Schiavo talking about Israel and Palestine, becomes nothing more than talk radio theater. And that's not what I'm here for, David.
I had, before I go, I just want to say that I had an idiocracy moment going through the mall.
I have those almost every day.
Yeah, going through Sam's Club, where I go and I look at these boxes, and it's all... Guitar Hero guitar, and it looks like a bunker. So you go around all the Guitar Hero boxes, right? And you go inside the bunker, and there's a screen, and they have these drums set up, and this guitar set up, and all you do is you see these two kids playing, well, miming playing, and then you see the mother of these two encouraging the other ones to mime. It was too surreal for words. Encouraging to be.
And you know, you're plugged in and everything, so you'll get it. I saw a video at I can't remember the name of the website offhand, but it was a video of probably an 8-year-old kid who was playing a real live honest to God Strat.
Yeah.
Along to, of course, you know, there are two rock and roll songs that 8-year-old boys learn. One of them is Smoke on the Water. The other one is, care to guess?
You really got me going.
Stairway to Heaven.
Stairway to Heaven, yeah.
And so he's playing the guitar solo to Stairway to Heaven, and he's really playing it. But the comment was what killed me. It said, hey, where's the buttons on this thing? Guitar Hero just offends me. And I know that makes me sound snarky and stuff, but it does.
The best commentary, I keep saying it, on Guitar Hero is, the, I don't know if you've seen it yet, the South Park episode.
No.
Oh, it's just classic, Bob. Every single minute of that, you're just like, holy cow, they nailed it, because they talk about this video game. These guys are so sick. They talk about this video game that was competing with Guitar Hero. It's a new fad. It was called Chasing the Dragon. And this guy with a heroin needle, and he poked his arm, and this dragon was like, catch me, catch me, catch me, catch me, you almost got me.
Oh, God.
You almost got, and no matter.
You know, Stone and Parker are, for the most part, I'm fairly well convinced, right wing.
Oh, you really think so?
Oh, yeah, but, the real icky.
I don't know about that. I think they're, you know.
But, God, sometimes I can't help laughing.
I know. To me, I think they're just like a really, really pessimistic, like Carlin. I guess they've seen too. They've seen. Too
much. Come on, Team America, rubbing out Janine Garofalo.
I think they just. You know what I think it was? I think what they did was, they just wanted to lampoon everyone. And really, that's what they do. And I do have like issues and criticisms with South Park, but then again. I guess everyone has issues and criticisms with everything, so.
Yeah, I hated the issue where they had Richard Dawkins inventing the world religion 500 years down the road. It's because it's the kind of stuff I'm sensitive to. But I get a giggle out of it from time to time. And was it South Park that took so many stabs at Family Guy? Not even a real cartoon. Was that South Park?
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of the South Park and with what they did with Scientology, some guy in a blog, I have to send it to you, found out that L. Ron Hubbard lifted everything from Scientology, from some Germanic text that a lot of Scientologists don't want you to know exists.
Oh, no. Don't talk about Scientology. People get really nervous when we do that.
Oh, okay.
Their tritons or something start acting up. Or, yeah.
We never talked about that.
No, we didn't.
It'll be removed in the podcast.
Yeah, that right.
Archives. It won't be there.
Yeah, it'll gone.
We'll be talking about Richard Marx instead.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Richard Marx and his trend of wearing bomber jackets, and how many people started wearing navy bomber jackets and spiked hair with one earring.
let me just say this.
Last week,
toward the end of the week on Strictly Confidential, one of the tracks that Peter played with one of his guests had one of those gorgeous old Isaac Hayes tunes in it.
Right.
And, you know, see what happens in the chat room. There it is. I'm calling Xenu! And I just sat there listening to it, just reveling in how man.
Yeah.
And then the little light bulb went on, and I realized that this was Chef from South Park, and that he got pissed off because he's a hardcore Scientologist now. Over the episode, Mom, Tom Cruise is in the closet and he won't come out.
Yeah.
And Isaac got all bent and And so, it's a disconnect. Well, it's like, in a way, it's like listening to Cat Stevens and realizing, wait a minute.
Well, you know, I think the reason what happened to Isaac Hayes is, if I'm going to go Psych 101, I mean, here's a guy who was a backup musician and also a songwriter for Sam and Dave and pretty much everyone at Stax. He was the head writer with David Porter, you know?
Yeah.
And then he decided to become a solo artist, and at a party, he started suddenly doing soul songs and covers and reinterpretations of the pop standards of the day. And then what happened is people just kept blowing him up more and more and more. I mean, and to give you evidence of that, he had one of his albums titled Black Moses. So
oh, God, yeah. How many times did I hear that?
Yeah, and if you open the cover, he's in a Moses stance. I mean, he started out as a staff writer and said, nah, I'm just going to write the songs and all that. But really, what when they opened the door for Hayes, he came in and he got completely blinded by the lights of fame, basically. And I think that's one of the casualties of being a great music icon, which I think a lot of people are seeing now. It's turning into a tragedy day by day, because there's only so much. It's a delicate balance being an icon, and I think what eventually happens is the iconic image that you have to live up to, you just become more and more distorted as time goes on. And I think that's exactly what happened to Isaac Hayes. I mean, how many times?
The Richard Corey syndrome.
Right.
Some people go home and put a bullet in their head. Others become Scientologists.
How many times can you go on stage with chains and sunglasses and sing the theme from Shaft?
Shut your mouth.
Yeah, and not superimpose yourself into that character that you aren't. You know, if you really want to look at another example, probably the same.
How many times can Alice Cooper go on stage and chop his own head off and not eventually be an alcoholic and drug addict?
How many times can you dress up like a prince and then start acting like Prince? And your name is Prince.
And then you have to change your name to a symbol.
And then change your name to a symbol. So, you know, I think that's what was going on with Isaac. And I think that's what happens. That's what's happening right now in America with a lot of our iconic figures. They just get so blinded by everything else, and they don't realize what it is they can be doing for the rest of the world at large, I guess. I mean, there was a time where I would say Isaac Hayes was really a subject for change, but when you take a cult-type mentality and you say, this is really something enlightening and you just can't understand it, and at the same time, when you literally go on the radio and say, no, you can't make fun of science, you can't make fun of Scientology, but I have no problem with you making fun of Catholicism, Christianity, Buddhism, but Scientology you have a problem with?
Right, yeah.
I mean...
But look, David, that's handy stuff, because that is the history of religion.
Oh, yeah, without
because, a doubt. Because it points out what Sam Harris said so well, and that is that every true believer in one faith is an atheist with regard to all others, and therefore it's okay to cut their heads off. Well, I said the okay to cut their heads off part. Sam Harris didn't say that, but it's by implication. You know, die heretic. You know, it's the old joke of the two fundies talking.
Oh, one last thing before
sure.
I go. Did you see the Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
Oh, God, yes. You know, I'm such...
I'm going to go order some ice cream from South America.
You took his eyeballs.
Yeah.
No, we're in inside baseball now, David.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but this stuff can be viewed online, and I, you know, there are a lot of people who don't find Aqua Teen Hunger Force at all funny, but I just sit and clutch my sides and laugh my butt off.
To recap for people, go watch the George Carlin on YouTube. It's bad for you. Just type in George Carlin, it's bad for you, and come up with all seven pieces of the special they showed Monday.
Cool. David, take it easy.
Later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Our buddy David in Maine. Our pop culture correspondent. And he really is. And if you've never heard Jeff Healey outside his pop his pop incarnations, you really should. Because, wow. And one correspondent writes, wrong mouse, Bob. Forget the playing position of Jeff Healey. Might as well be the color of his socks. He could play and create. Game over. And yeah, that's true. But, you know, with David also mentioned Stanley Jordan.
And that's a guy who did not play a guitar like a guitar is typically played. You know, it was that whole tappy-tappy thing, and it was beautiful. But, yeah, he's right. Haven't heard from him in ages. All right, we are at about 19 minutes before the hour, which means there's about, 15 or so minutes of conversation left if you want to jump in. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON. Or on your own nickel if you've got an unlimited long-distance dialing plan, 304-658-5453. In the meantime, however, there's one that I just can't resist. It's sort of, well, you know, we have... just talk about this stuff because you don't listen to it, you don't want to listen to it, I don't listen to it, I don't want to listen to it. No, okay, wait a minute. Phone call first. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Betsy.
Hey, Betsy, how are you?
I'm good. Listen, I just finished my caucus, and I got a ride from one of the Obama campaign staff.
Yeah.
And I want to know, do you want to talk to me or do you want to talk to her?
I'd rather, frankly.
She's a volunteer. I'm sorry, she's a volunteer.
Okay. I'd just as soon talk to you, Betsy, because the partisan stuff, you know. Now, you're there in the little blue oasis of Texas at Austin.
Yes.
How did it go?
Yeah, it went great for us because we arrived 45 minutes early. But right now, the line outside of the middle school is going an entire block.
Has it been that way all day, or is this the after-work crowd?
No, this is just the caucus. The voting has been 10-minute waits, 15-minute waits. It's just the caucus that is this huge long line, in part because it's completely disorganized.
How long are the polls open?
The polls closed at 7.
Okay, and this is what I'd like you to do, because Texas has this hybrid thing going on that I don't even pretend to understand.
Right.
Can you help us make some sense of it?
Yes, okay, so there's two things. Everybody votes. Then after you vote, they give you this coupon to bring to the caucus. So you can bring the coupon to the caucus. It looks to me like a large number of the people who voted and who voted absentee and who voted early are all at the caucus tonight. The place is packed. So with the caucus, you get to vote again. And if you want to stick around, you vote again. The voting again is public this time. You have to sign the Obama sheet or the Clinton sheet or the other sheet. And then if you want to stick around and get elected delegate to the county, you can stick around and get elected delegate.
Okay, so
I chose not to.
So is the caucus for purposes of the county conventions and then the state convention?
Yes.
Then what does the popular vote accomplish?
30% of our delegates, of our real delegates to the national convention, are chosen based on the sheets that we signed tonight, which is why people go.
So
60% of the six, the vote last week and this afternoon, all day today, determined 60% of the delegates. 30% of the delegates are determined by what papers are signed at caucuses tonight, and 10% are super.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this philosophically. The purpose of this is to have the popular vote is for people to have their say, and then would you describe the caucus effect or the caucus purpose as to be designed more for the political hardcores?
Yes. Yes.
Did you get any, what sense did you get out of your caucus as to which way people, at least where you were leaning?
Many more were signing up at the Obama table. The Obama table had a huge line and the Hillary table had barely a line. But you had to sign in first. You had to show your coupon and sign in and then go to the table for the candidate.
Fascinating process. I'm so used to a situation where you just go and vote and leave and...
Apparently, I talked to a whole bunch of people at the beginning of this, and nobody had ever done this before. All of these people who've been living in this neighborhood for 30 or 40 years and been voting in this precinct for 30 or 40 years had never heard of the caucus thing until, you know, 2 weeks ago.
And the Republican primary is happening as well today, right?
Yes, the Republican primary was today, and their caucus is in the gym starting at 8. Ours started at 7:15. So they're in the same school, but in on the other side.
I don't suppose you poked your nose in and just kind of had a peep around or anything. Well, you, no, it didn't start yet, so okay, never
it
mind.
It hasn't started yet.
I can't, I, no, you know, with people like the Dallas Morning News,
have,
with people
Republicans
like...
Republicans are going to have no place to park because the Democrats are still lined up all the way up the block. So there is no parking anywhere.
Oh, poor little Republicans.
Aren't even going to be able to show up.
You mean they'll have to park a long way away and actually walk and care about voting?
They would have to, yes, or walk from their house because it's a pretty dense neighborhood. Nobody is all that far from the precinct.
Nobody was
all that far from the school.
I know this makes me sound petty, Betsy, but considering what they've done to our attempts to get out the vote, I'm not real broken up about something like that.
I'm not either.
Good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
And I did blog about my voting experience, and in, I don't know, an hour or so, people can check the blog again, and I will blog about the caucus experience.
Wonderful, wonderful. The more I look at them, I don't know that a pure caucus is the way to go. But I like the hybrid idea, as strange as it may seem. I like the hybrid idea that's going on down there because somehow when you just vote and walk away, it's kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah.
I like the, I mean, once you've signed your thing, I mean, do you actually caucus? Do you discuss issues with other caucusers or?
There's no way they're going to get to the discussion part for at least an hour, given the number of people outside. So I didn't stay.
And okay, but
the discussion part is going to be who wants to be a delegate and that kind of stuff. It's not the delegates will be chosen representative from who voted tonight, and also the delegates will be chosen from among the people who voted tonight.
You remind me, I've got to do a little digging around because our county conventions are coming up, and I guess that's the secondary, the caucus part of what you went through today. In West Virginia here, we have a county convention that nobody knows about, probably for obvious reasons. But I've got to find out when that is because I think it would be kind of cool to go and participate in that.
Okay. I also took lots of pictures, which I will post.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And I have to say, I know that you're not partisan, but the Obama people, I asked for a ride because with the medication I take, I can't drive myself.
Right.
And I had three offers today. I had three calls back of people saying, okay, we can give you a ride. How big is the wheelchair? Can we get it in a van? Can we get it in a car?
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's good political organization. And bear in mind, Betsy, I'm very partisan. I'm voting for the Democratic nominee. And
yes,
I will crawl to the polls to vote for the Democratic nominee. There's no bigger partisan than me. I just refuse to involve myself in the pettiness between the two candidates.
I see. Okay.
I think they both have very admirable qualities, and I think I'm probably going to vote for Obama in my purely ceremonial vote in May, but that could change.
Right.
But I'm glad you called in with this report on the experience. It sounds for political types, it sounds like a blast, and you couldn't pry me away from there with a crowbar.
Well, we got to get you down here next time then.
Yeah, nah, not so likely. But
okay.
Yeah, I love the idea, but I don't think there's ever a risk of me becoming a voting Texan, although I might be a visitor someday.
Perfect. All right. Well, thanks very much for letting me call in.
Oh, Betsy, it's a pleasure.
Talk to you later.
All right. You take care, and give our thanks to your ride provider. That shows a good political organization and one that's ready to go into November.
I will indeed.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, with a report on the primary from Texas this evening there in Austin. I don't know. You can't judge Austin, or you can't judge Texas by Austin, because Austin is going to have a nasty habit of doing the right thing. Whereas you can't say the same thing about your Dallases and your Lubbocks and your Houstons and so forth. Because among other things, and you know, I just love this myself, the Dallas Morning News endorsed the radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, saying that they acknowledged that he had no mathematical chance of winning the nomination, but meanwhile, if it should happen that radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee wins Texas, doesn't that kind of lock up his claim on the vice presidency? Or at least the nomination from McCain? I mean, isn't that the point where he gets to go to McCain and say, listen, you can't take the South, and Republicans can't win without the South. You can't take the South without me. This is all, in radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee's mind, this is all a set piece that has been prepared for him by the Almighty. And if the Almighty makes him vice president, that means the Almighty is willing to make him president. Whether it's a matter of McCain clutching at his chest over a plate of lobster Thermidor some night, or just going through two terms and then passing the torch on to Mike Huckabee. Huckabee also is relatively young. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. You want a reason to vote for Hillary Clinton in November? McCain Huckabee. You want a reason to vote for Barack Obama in November? McCain Huckabee. Or, as is being reported, and this is, you know, this is all just speculation. This is horse race handicapping. But there is speculation out there of, this was at Crooks and Liars, are you ready for the M&M ticket? Talking about the fact that Karl Rove showed up on Hannity and Doormat to tout McCain and Mitt. McCain Willard. That's right. Yeah, that would be charming. And see, that's the other side of the coin, is that Mitt showed his loyalty by getting out and letting McCain have it. And it's a question of that kind of dumbheaded loyalty, you know, the sort of smarmy kind of bootlicking stuff, or the political hardball game that radical fundamentalist Mike Huckabee is playing. I had some Limbaugh audio for you, and I'm going to save that for tomorrow night, too. Because it's not just every day that you hear America's truth detector agree when a caller refers to Barack Obama as Curious George. Yes, yes, yes. Barack Obama, white courtesy phone. Barack Obama, white courtesy phone. They are beginning to gear it up, and it is coming, and it is coming hard. And this is going to be, this is going to be ugly. But, you know, if you like a bare-knuckled brawl, this is the one to be in. They're going to do everything, but the Republican Party is going to do everything, but haul out the Grand Kliegel. But then again, they're the Republican Party, so by definition, they kind of already have, haven't they? So that's it for this evening. Thanks for the phone calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks for the ideas. Thanks for supporting the horn. Peter Godbold will be a rerun because of technical incompetence on the part of his internet service provider. John Fox had a business meeting, and I'm not up to a horn solo. So that's it for the live broadcast day, but the rerun's going to be pretty wonderful. It's Peter's show from when? From the 26th of February, that's when. So that's coming up. Peter Godbold is also our IT consultant, and what a wonder he is at that. John Fox is our chief engineer and head musician. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org makes the streams do what streams are supposed to do. So if you value what happens on the horn, you value Ben and White Rose. Every show on the horn is brought to you in part by all of the dedicated, wonderful folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net. Be a part of the solution. Help us end the torment of mountaintop removal. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. And when you're in that kind of trouble, if you can find a scapegoat, by God, you'll use it.
Not only that, if you can find a job, you'll do it. Any job.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 118 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch over at CRMW.net, and we are happy to have their support. It's a fine organization, the CRMW.net. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, February 26th of 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m., approximately 9.02 p.m. Eastern Time, you are listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and participate. We'll talk about what's on your mind and what's coming up on the show. I'll give you the phone numbers in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. Some of the world's smartest people are in that chat room, and the fun links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the Head On Radio Network main site, and you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a very small part. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to our MySpace page, more information about the show, and links to help you locate music that you hear on the show. The toll-free lines are 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. We are listener-supported. That would be area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. And it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the email during the breaks, and you can communicate with me that way, or by telephone, or by joining us in chat. We are all there waiting for you to arrive. It's an integral part of the network. If you're missing chat, you're indeed missing the visual aids for the Head On Radio Network. You're indeed missing the visual aids. You know, what a remarkable night. Bob's show just preceded this, and we had a new caller, first-time caller. His name was John, and John is, in fact, like so many of our listeners, an articulate and very bright person and involved in higher mathematics. You've got to love and be proud of a network, to be associated with a network like this that attracts listeners and callers like that. It just never ceases to amaze me. I couldn't be prouder to be a part of this network. We also had a new chatter this evening, who streams this show, the Strictly Confidential Radio show. Apparently he streams that via the archives and listens to it as a podcast during the car or during his commute in his car. So we're always glad to have new folks join us here, and what a privilege it is. Speaking of folks joining us here, I have a little thing I was going to do later on, but I'll tell you about it now. Here we go. This is posted on the Blairco Project today. Since it's posted there, I can go ahead and let it out. We've been working.